If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
There's planning a hike, and then there's planning a hunt. And what we're about to get into here, this was no random act, no spur-of-the-moment snap. This was a deliberate, intentional act, a predator setting the stage for prey. On today's episode, we're diving into one of the most chilling conversations we've had yet, a detailed behavioral analysis of the man now accused of the brutal double homicide at Devil's Den State Park. Joining me is retired FBI Special Agent Jennifer Coffendaffer, who pulls no punches when it comes to unpacking the predator mindset and the disturbing indicators that this attack may have been in the works for years. Andrew McGann didn't just wake up angry. He left his house dressed for murder, with tape on his license plate and a tactical-style backpack that Coffendaffer believes was pre-packed with tools for the kill. It's not a guy going for a nature walk. That's someone on a mission. When you hear what she thinks he was actually hunting, not the parents, but the children, you start to see just how twisted this whole thing might be. We're going to talk trial psychology, predatory fixation, what this guy's behavior on the path tells us about his previous patterns, and whether law enforcement should be looking into more than just this one horrific incident. And if you thought it couldn't get darker, oh, it does. Because this same man was about to start a new job as an elementary school teacher. We're going to get into the systematic breakdown that allowed Andrew McGann to leapfrog from one school district to another, each time leaving behind a trail of accusations and red flags that somehow never made it into his official record. That sounds like a recipe for disaster. It is. And this might be the wake-up call we've been ignoring far too long. So how does a teacher with a growing reputation for weird and possibly predatory behavior end up in charge of children year after year until he snaps and ends up at Devil's Den? Let's get into it.
Well, first and foremost, Tony, this wasn't a happenstance. Mm-hmm. This was an individual who left his home that day and said, I'm going to take a victim. Mm-hmm. I'm a predator and I'm out for prey. We know that because he went to the effort to disguise his plate and cover it with tape. Mm-hmm. We know that because of how he was clothed. Here it is, hot in Arkansas on a trail, and he was not dressed for your typical hike. No. Secondarily, that backpack you talked about, that's a kit bag, I believe, mm-hmm. filled with what he would have needed. And I think he was on the prowl, and I think he saw the prey. In my opinion, that prey was a little 7-year-old and a little 9-year-old, and just hoping as he followed them that one may stray, as happens. I mean, would you go hiking with kids? They go run ahead, they lag behind, they see a tulip and they go pick it. You know, they should be able to do all those things.
Yeah.
Without being under the exact nose of their parents. And I think that he saw this family and saw these two girls and was waiting for the opportunity.
We had talked to hikers who had also witnessed him before the attacks, and they said to us here exclusively that they felt something was very off. They knew right away the next day when they heard about this story in the news that this had taken place. The four of them had been out hiking together. They all knew exactly who they were talking about, because this is the one man, after passing dozens of people on this trail, that stood out to them the most as being off. So that he looked them up and down, made them very uncomfortable, bad energy. And they were 100% sure, no question, that this was the man. When you have somebody that's out there that's on this sort of mission like this, and he's given off these vibes, and, you know, seemingly somewhat prepared, the blacked out license plate, he's got the getup going,
Do you think this was his first horrific rodeo?
You know, I'm going to be surprised if he has not committed other types of assaults / burglaries, something else when he was in Texas and in Oklahoma prior to coming here, just because this was really brazen. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is broad daylight, multiple people on this path. It just would really surprise me. Not that he was successful previously, but if there aren't going to be some unsolved situations, you know, around Grapevine Lake, of course, Texas is my neck of the woods, the Flower Mound area, Lewisville area, Lake Lewisville. If this wouldn't have been tried, at least on another occasion, if we don't come to find out about that.
That would be kind of shocking. In both ways. I think if we find out that he had done more, or if he didn't do more, the way that this was all set up, not very tightly planned, though. This was a sloppy attack. I mean, you're on a trail on a very busy day in the middle of summer. It was described by the hikers that we spoke to that you looked one way down the trail, you looked another way. Your odds of seeing another hiker were pretty good through most of the day, that someone's going to be way up there or way back there. It wasn't exactly a desolate hiking trail by any means. So that's where I kind of looking at the psychology here of this guy, because that's what doesn't make a ton of sense to me. I'm coming to it from a healthy brain, but I'm trying to put myself in an unhealthy brain. How would that make any sense that you're going to go on a busy hiking trail and you see this target of yours? Let's say he was targeting the two little girls. We know from allegations that he had an affinity for little girls from some of the past from the past schools and parents and kids that he had interacted with. A lot of allegations out there on that. But back to the trail, if that was his target, how on earth do you think you're going to stab two parents and then carry a 7 and 9 year old off this trail with nobody the wiser? I mean, these aren't like infants that are, oh, it's just having a bad day. 7 and 9 year olds, they're going to be screaming, what the hell just happened here? If this guy is going to try and get them off the trail and he's not going to fit those two kids in a backpack. Was this just, you know, a fantasy that was completely devoid of rational thought or in terms of how to carry this out in any sort of realistic way? Or did he have other plans maybe to harm the children further back in the woods if he had gotten his hands on them?
Well, I bring you to a case I know you know well, mm-hmm. and that's the Rachel Morin case.
Yeah.
A very fit, very strong, a very fast woman, very in shape on a trail that, again, a lot of people took, and he, you know, that perpetrator was able to drag her off to a cistern type situation and attack. Mm-hmm. And so I see that this individual thought that possibly they could get away with it in that type of space. Remember, kicking and screaming doesn't last very long if they're incapacitated. Yeah. And I think that would have been part of the dream, or dream is a bad word, part of his, you know, hope that he would have been able to do.
Nightmare fantasy.
Tony, fantasy. Yeah. These people are so, they think they are the smartest guy, the quickest guy. You know, right when this first happened in an interview, I said, we're looking for somebody who is really in good shape. Mm-hmm. Because to attack like this, he had to have confidence in his physical prowess. And certainly he was in good shape, I think, from the pictures I saw. He worked out all the time, it was described. And so I think he had a lot of confidence in what he could do and mm-hmm. play out. We've talked about Brian Koberger going into a house where he knew, I mean, there was a car all lined up. He knew there were other people in there.
Yeah.
But these people have such a false self-awareness of how great and grandiose they are. And Tony, I think that's your answer.
Yeah.
It's not logical, but it's their reality.
The ego took over. I can handle that. I can do this. I can plan all these things. And that's what makes it so confusing, I think, to the rest of the world, is you can plan all these things over here like really good for if you're looking at in predator standards, where it's like, yeah, that would make sense. You want to cover up your license plate. Have the bag, have the tactical gear, have all that. But they're like missing key parts of like common sense of if that's your goal, well, then these other things have to be considered as well. And they seem to skip over some of those things, almost feeling like they may have a superpower or something. And that's what I really wonder about. Let's talk about how this guy got to Northwest Arkansas. He was a teacher, which I want to get your reaction on that one right away. That I was shocked to hear he was an elementary school teacher, passed from district to district. And we'll talk about the passing around here in a moment. But what was your reaction knowing this guy had been teaching elementary kids for the last 4 or 5 years and was set to start again here this week?
Well, the biggest thing to me was most predators like this, they're on the outside of that school, mm-hmm. right? They're hoping to entice a kid off that playground. They're in the playground lurking. This guy actually put himself through college, obtained a teaching certificate. By the way, Tony, I don't know if you know this, just through the fifth grade. So he specifically specialized in teaching up through the fifth grade. So to me, this is a fox that was prepared himself to be in the hen house by educating himself. And I think this was something planned for years because of his affinity for little girls. So that was the biggest thing that just sort of blew me over, his preparation to be the fox in the hen house.
Yeah, I mean, that is spooky. And I know there's plenty of people who do get teaching certificates for specific ranges, elementary education, things of that nature. But when you look at it in a predatory sense, you go, oh, that's why you did it. Not why most other mm-hmm. people do it, because they're just good with kids of that age more than older kids. It's more, oh, you have a really some sort of an affinity over here, an unhealthy one. For kids of that age, it's like the 9/11 hijackers getting one-way tickets in a really other twisted sort of way. The fact that he was able to go from district to district, and I know we talked a little bit earlier about, you know, was he doing other things outside of school hours? Were there other crimes committed, which I'm sure a lot of people are going to be looking into now, including us. But the fact that he bounced from district to district because of something known as passing the trash, basically what that means is school districts, when they have non-conforming employee, to put it nicely, an employee that is having complaints lodged against them, but they can't quite internally put their finger on if this is real or not, or they just don't put enough effort into that or never actually report it to authorities who could maybe look into it. They internally say, you know what, how about you just resign? And then we will be none the wiser. You can go another district, you go somewhere else, and it will never be a criminal record, and no one will ever know the difference. That's what passing the trash is. And it works in many, many states. Texas now finally just passed a bill like the other week that would have prevented him from going the way he did. It's too late for the Brinks, but it is now in place. So I guess good for Texas for finally getting that up to speed. But across the country, there is no system for that. So it really only works if you're traveling within your own state, if you're going to be in that system for being looked up. This has been a huge problem for a very long time in our country. It's, I would almost say, epidemic. As I'm digging more and more into this, the numbers are shocking. Of the amount of teachers that have this happen, where it's, well, you're going to resign, and then they go to another school, and you look back, and, oh, there were a lot of complaints lodged, but they don't follow them. How is this going on, and why have we not had any sort of realistic reform to make this work better?
Well, I think this Devil's Den case might be the turning point, Tony, because as you said, you're uncovering and seeing how pervasive it is. I think many of us that have seen our kids go through the system and know teachers and know about this happening, we've always wondered. Mm-hmm. But this is the bottom line, Tony. You have a system in place where it's swept under the rug. There's no red flag on their jacket. Mm-hmm. So the background checks, I think, are very minimal. In other words, let's just check to see if they have a criminal record. And mm-hmm. other than that, I mean, who would even get a tenant without calling their previous landlord? Mm-hmm. I mean, we at least do that in, you know, for people who are landlords. And here we are hiring teachers to be around our small kids and not have a mechanism to go back and really look into their files and see what the complaints were. It's really wrong and it needs to be changed.
What we're looking at here isn't just the story of one monstrous act on a quiet trail in Arkansas. This is a cautionary tale of how predators navigate through our blind spots, the loopholes, the paperwork gaps, the institutional shoulder shrugs. Andrew McGann didn't just fall through the cracks. The system laid down a red carpet for him. From Texas to Oklahoma to Arkansas, a trail of warning signs followed him. Complaints, suspicion, discomfort, all of it handled internally and quietly swept aside so he could move on without a blemish. And each time he landed in front of another classroom full of kids, that's what should really keep us up at night. What Jennifer Coffendaffer laid out here is more than criminal profiling. It's a diagnosis of a system failure. A man like McGann doesn't build a life around children without intention. You don't earn a degree specifically in elementary education, pass through certification checks, and stick close to the youngest, most vulnerable students unless you have a reason. And the fact that this reason slipped past the very institutions meant to protect those kids, that is unacceptable. Let's be honest, this isn't just about Arkansas or even just about Devil's Den. This is about every school district that's ever looked the other way. Every administrator who thought, let's just have him resign. Every policy that allows whispers to be blurred in filing cabinets and buried instead of reported to someone with a badge. This is a national problem, one we are calling out loudly, right here and right now. So what happens next? Well, lawmakers in Texas have already finally started closing the loopholes with legislation designed to stop this exact kind of pass-the-trash behavior. But it's too late for the Brinks family, and it doesn't change what happened on the trail. It's going to take a lot more than a few good bills to fix what's broken. It takes people like Jennifer, like you, like me, asking the hard questions and refusing to let this kind of institutional negligence stay hidden in the fine print. If you're still listening, ask yourself this: who's watching your district? What red flags are quietly sitting in someone's desk drawer? Because an ex-McGann might already be out there. And this time we don't get to say we didn't see it coming. Tell me what your thoughts are in the comments section on YouTube. If you're not already there, search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi to find us. Do the same search on any podcast platform to find us there so you can take us on the go, wherever you are going. Please let me know your thoughts in the comments and press subscribe so you don't miss any of our coverage on this case and the many we cover for you right here. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.